Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Murder Board Podcast. This is Civil Trials, a discussion show for the Murder Board Podcast. I'm your host, Walter, and tonight I am joined by Savannah.
Hello.
And Shelton.
Hello.
And tonight we will be discussing the 2014 David Fincher film. Yes, another David Fincher film, Gone Girl. If you have not seen Gone Girl, this is your spoiler warning. If you have, I hope you enjoy.
It's fucking wild.
Love it.
So wild.
I aspire to be as crazy as her.
Man, oh man. I had such a fun time rewatching this movie. I don't know. Okay, so this is our third David Fincher movie we've covered in like less than a few months. And I say third is because our first one that we did was me and Shelton and Javon. We did Zodiac. It's the same director.
Oh.
But
it didn't earlier have the same vibe.
Yeah, and earlier this month, I recorded a secret episode that will be out on Thanksgiving Day, as of this recording, with an old friend of mine who used to work at Jump Street, an old trampoline park we used to work at. His name's Adam, and we did the movie Seven. So as of this recording, this will be our third David Fincher movie, because this will come after that episode. So like I said before, I love David Fincher. He's like one of my favorite directors. I said Gone Girl was probably my favorite of his films. Will that still ring true now that I've seen Seven? We will find out at the end of this podcast, because I'm kind of conflicted now, but I do love this movie. But so here's my first question. When's the first time you guys saw Gone Girl?
Now, like 30 minutes ago.
I watched it back in high school. Loved it.
Yeah, I also watched this a little after it came out. 2014. I remember when I watched it. It was me and my mom, and we had got it off of demand. We had bought it off demand because we had nothing else to watch. That 2014 was a wild year for my family. It was also a wild year for movies. It was I remember a lot. 2014 had a lot of movies to come out, and I seen a lot of them. But so Gone Girl, man, this movie. Okay, so before we take our break here, I do want to ask you guys about this movie is based on a book by the author Gillian Flynn. I want to know if you guys have ever heard of her.
Nope.
Outside of this movie, no. Okay, so she's only done like three books and a short story, but I knew that she was someone when I kept seeing her name pop up after watching this movie. Also, this movie, when it came out, it was just like, it was super huge. Like, it wasn't a lot of hype around it, but it was a lot of people talking about it, like critic wise and everything. But like Gillian Flynn, she's an American writer / novelist of fiction, mystery, thrillers. She has published three novels, those novels being Sharp Objects, Dark Places, and Gone Girl, all of which has been adapted for film and television. Sharp Objects was adapted to a television show on HBO, I think last year, 2019. Dark Places was one of the first movies that got adapted, and Gone Girl was 2014. Have you guys ever seen Sharp Objects or Dark Places?
No.
Okay, I did. I've seen Dark Places, and I thought it was an okay movie with a very tragic story. I haven't seen Sharp Objects yet. It's on HBO Max, but like I don't know, I'll get around to it someday. But I do recommend Dark Places if you find it. It's Charlize Theron and Ty Sheridan and Chloe Grace Moretz. It's about a woman who comes back to her hometown to talk to the man that maybe not had murdered her sister, and they kind of talk and use flashbacks and everything. It was insane. It's just a little somber, but I totally recommend it. Believe it or not, I actually haven't read her books, but I am, after watching this movie, I am considering it. And last little fact about Gillian Flynn, she's a former TV critic for Entertainment Weekly before she started writing her novels.
Cool.
Yeah. So, she's done a lot more. I know she's been scripting a lot of stuff for people in Hollywood as of recently. But right now, we're going to take a short little break, and then we'll be back with some basic facts on Gone Girl.
So you got to the bar around 11 today. Where were you before that, just to cross that off?
Well, I was home. I left at 9:30, got a cup of coffee, newspaper, went to Sawyer Beach and read the news.
Did you visit with anyone there?
Well, I mean, I kind of go to Sawyer Beach for the solitude.
So your wife has no friends here. Is she kind of standoffish? Ivy League, rubs people the wrong way?
She's from New York. She's complicated. She's got very high standards.
Type A? Well, that can make you crazy if you're not like that. You seem pretty laid back. Type B. Speaking of which, Amy's blood type.
God, I don't know. I have to look it up at the house.
You don't know if she has friends. You don't know what she does all day. And you don't know your wife's blood type.
Sure, y'all are married.
I maybe it's type O.
Where are her folks? New York?
Yeah.
Can they get here in time for this press conference tomorrow?
Tomorrow? I have no idea. I haven't talked to them.
You haven't called your wife's parents
yet? I mean, you can't get a signal in this building. I've been in here talking to you.
Well, call them, please, Nick, now.
Fine. Should I know my wife's blood type?
No. All right, so we're back. We're going to talk about Gone Girl. Gone Girl was released October 3rd, 2014, directed by David Fincher. Story and screenplay by Gillian Flynn, based on the book by Gillian Flynn. The film stars Ben Affleck, Rosamund Pike, Neil Patrick Harris, and Tyler Perry.
Yeah, I was so surprised when I saw Tyler Perry. Holy shit.
I have words with this man.
He was good in there, though.
He was.
I know, which is why I'm so pissed.
But he did his thing.
All right, so the plot goes as such. In Catheridge, Missouri, former New York-based writer Nick Dunn, played by Ben Affleck, and his glamorous wife Amy, played by Rosamund Pike, present a portrait of a blissful marriage to the public. However, when Amy goes missing on the couple's fifth wedding anniversary, Nick becomes the prime suspect in her disappearance. The resulting police pressure and media frenzy causes the Dunns' image of a happy union to crumble, leading to tantalizing questions about who Nick and Amy truly are. The film's budget was $61 million, and the box office was $370.3 million. This movie was also nominated at the Oscars that following year. Rosamund Pike was nominated for Best Actress, but she lost to Julianne Moore in Still Alice.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Tragedy.
I know. I looked at the lineup. It wasn't that much of a lineup. I haven't seen Still Alice, but I still think Rosamund Pike probably should have got it for this movie.
Yes. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Yeah, she did so good.
She was amazing.
She's an inspiration.
She was Amy, right?
Yeah.
Let me just say, right, at first it's like, oh, damn, this bitch crazy. And it's like, oh, she's really crazy. Oh, she's kind of hot. Something about a woman that can ruin your life, dude.
I know, right? Look.
Such an inspiration.
Man, oh, man. She probably should have won for that.
Definitely should have won for that. Oh my god.
Yeah, again, I haven't seen Still Alice. I have no idea what's it about, and I have my thoughts on Julianne Moore, but so we're gonna get into the movie after this short little break.
Nick Dunn, you're probably the most hated man in America right now. Did you kill your wife, Nick?
Everyone told us and told us marriage is hard work. Not for me and Nick.
As you all know, my wife, Amy Elliott Dunn, disappeared 3 days ago. I had nothing to do with the disappearance of my wife. I have nothing to hide.
Has Amy got friends we can talk to?
No, not really.
You don't know if she has friends, you don't know what she does all day, and you don't know your wife's blood type.
Just being a good guy, so everybody can see him being a good guy.
Well, you really don't like him, do you?
All I'm trying to do is be nice to the people who are volunteering to help find Amy.
I will practice believing my husband loves me, but I could be wrong.
You ever see that guy in the glasses before?
Amy is the kind of girl who attracts admirers.
Whoever took her is bound to bring her back.
I'm hoping you can tell me what this means.
You want to solve Amy's treasure hunt?
You seen this girl around here?
Yeah, I remember her.
I know you. I saw you at the volunteer center.
I wanted to help.
What'd she want?
She wanted a gun.
We are all scared, but we are all here now.
I feel like something to be jettisoned if necessary. I feel like I could disappear.
The hallmark of a sociopath is a lack of empathy.
Amy lost a lot of blood in there. Then somebody mopped it up.
Why would they mop up the blood if they're trying to stage a crime scene?
Whatever they found, I think it's safe to assume that it's very bad.
I'd finally realized I am frightened of my own husband.
I would draw you as if you're doing a deposition. What to say, what not to say.
A trained monkey?
A trained monkey who doesn't get lethal injections.
She's going to eat you alive.
You assaulted her?
It's not good enough for you?
I hit her?
It's not even close.
Absolutely not. I never touched her.
We now believe Nick is involved in the disappearance of our daughter.
Without a body, without a murder weapon, their only hope is a confession.
Y'all know anything yet?
You need to tell me.
How was your marriage, Nick?
Are you asking me if I killed my wife?
Man of my dreams. This man of mine may kill me.
What about my son,
Nick?
This man may kill me. In her own words, this man may truly kill me.
You ever hear the expression, the simplest answer is often the correct one?
Actually, I've never found that to be true.
All right, so we're here to talk about Gone Girl. Oh my God. Okay, before I ask you guys the right off the bat questions that we go through the movie, I did want to say, like, I remember when this movie came out, the reason it was, I feel like a reason that it was really, really huge or like really talked about a lot is because this is kind of like Ben Affleck's comeback in a way. Like, I remember a lot of people were like, Ben Affleck's back, he can act. And then on the other side of it, his brother Casey Affleck had that very, very sad movie, Manchester by the Sea. So, like, in 1 year, these two just, like, dominated the media for a while. But also, I believe it was after this movie or before this movie, he had just been cast as Batman. So that's why he's so jacked in this movie, because he's, like, working out.
He really is.
Like, he's huge. He looks bigger than he should be for the character. And I'm like, yeah, that's the Batman. Like, that's kind of the joke of this movie. Like, that's him getting ready for Batman.
Yeah, it made sense though, because the way he was throwing Amy around, my God.
Like a ragdoll.
He fucking, dude, when it went to that flashback scene of them arguing when he was late to go somewhere, and he just throws her into the railing of the stairs. Like,
dude,
this movie does
about to wail on her after he threw her, too. He wasn't done.
This movie does a good job at, like, it demonizes him at the beginning, and when you start really seeing, like, what was actually going on, you start to realize, oh no, but she's the fucking crazy one and he's just being drove to the edge.
Is he? Let's get into the conversations.
Okay,
I love the way this movie begins. We got the voiceover of Ben Affleck as Nick, and he's we got Amy laying on his stomach, and she looks back at him as he's playing with her hair. And he's talking, he's like, I'm picturing of cracking open her skull, watching her brains fill out just to see what she's thinking.
That was a great scene.
Yeah.
It was. It's a great way to start it off.
And then it ends on that too. Oh my God, yeah. I loved it.
Yes. Oh yeah. This is David Fincher at his best. All right, so we start in July 5th, the morning of. And Ben Affleck is just standing outside. I guess he just put the trash on the curb. And, okay. So after that, I think we really get introduced to Nick Ben Affleck at the bar here when he meets his sister, Margot. And I love how the bar is just called The Bar.
The Bar.
Yeah.
They make a joke at that in the film.
I know. She said it's meta. So I was like, oh, that's even meta too. It made Walter happy. But let's stick with the first half of this movie here, just to kind of simplify it. Before we find out about Amy, especially towards you, Shelton, since this is your first time watching it, sticking at the beginning, not thinking about what we find out in the middle, how do you feel about Nick Ben Affleck in this movie as he, you know, goes from the bar, goes back home, missing cat is outside, missing wife, and we get this entire, like, investigation started here. How are you feeling about Ben Affleck?
I'm feeling like, okay, your wife just went missing. You're very unconcerned. and then I start thinking, okay, so rather he did it or he's just really not broken up about it. Like, maybe she was just a bitch and he hated her. And it's like, oh, okay, well, somebody took care of it for me, I guess.
I wrote in my notes, I'm like, okay, I haven't watched this movie in a while, so I remembered, but I didn't remember the details. And I was like, okay, so he's at the bar. Is this his alibi? And I mean, obviously it's not kind of sort of, but it is. But Savannah, do you remember when you first watched how you felt about Ben Affleck, and kind of compare that to how you feel now after you watched it?
I don't really remember. All I know is that I never thought he was the one that did it. Like, I always knew it wasn't him. I don't really remember how I felt. When I watch movies, I don't really, like, think much into detail. Like, is this person it? I don't know. I just kind of, like, zone out and just watch the movie. I don't really think much when I'm watching movies. But, like, as I'm, like, watching it, I always knew that I knew it wasn't him that did it. I was like, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. I remember when I first watched it, and I was like, all right, so obviously it's not Ben Affleck, but then again, it could be. So I was just kind of like riding with it. I didn't really think too much.
I've listened to way too many creepy written stories where it's it'll be like, my wife is the most beautiful person in my life. She is my muse. She is my everything. Now I just have to cut her open and use her guts to make my art, since she's my muse. So, yeah.
Makes sense, honestly. But
yeah, so I was like, it could be him.
It could be. Yeah. So we get we officially meet who, or find out who Nick and Amy are in a flashback, as Amy is the one telling the story in her little journal. And we get a flashback to January 2005, where Nick and Amy meet at a party. And it's this scene where I was like, okay, they have real chemistry here. He's charming. She's kind of standoffish, but she likes it. They're both flirting with each other. And then we have this beautiful scene of he takes her to a sugar truck or something like that.
Yeah.
And he it looks like it's snowing, and he wipes her lip, and that's kind of become their thing, where they, it kind of seals the deal for Nick there. And I think the earlier, again, not trying to keep in mind what happens later, but she does paint a really good picture of how they met and how they, grew into this relationship before she shows us how really toxic it is.
Yeah, how fucking crazy she is.
But I do like the part in that scene where her line is, she calls his chin villainous, which is foreshadowing for what she's going to do to him later, and how the media is going to look at him. And then Conolingus. And that kind of, again, it's another sealing of the deal for their relationship. But so we flash, we get back to the present here, and Margot and Nick are playing a game, they're playing Life at the bar, which is hilarious. Yeah. And they're talking about the anniversary and what to get her, but it's our first instance that he finds his wife very difficult, and the sister kind of agrees, and then he gets the call about his cat being outside, which I thought was weird. The cat was just outside. But we get back and he can't find Amy. And the neighbor hears yelling from outside. And then we get pretty much the kickoff of the story is when the police gets here. And we get our first clue, which is a glass table is broken in the living room. And that kind of sets off everything about this movie.
I was like, he is just so nonchalant. Walked in, the table, there's glass busted everywhere. Can't find your wife. Stuff's tore up. He's just like, Amy? Amy? So my wife's missing, and he's just nothing other than just dumbfounded. That's his emotion. Nothing other than being dumbfounded.
That set me off, honestly, because it's there's no way he would come back to that. He was confused, which is why at that point I lost suspicion that it was him. Because he was confused, but he wasn't concerned, which points me towards, okay, so this seems like something she would do regularly, but he still is curious on how the hell it happened.
I find it interesting that you caught on to that, because I knew right away, well, not when I first watched, but rewatching it now, I knew right away, okay, I connected the fact that, okay, he might think that this is one of her scavenger hunts. It's their fifth wedding anniversary.
Yeah.
And she always does the scavenger hunt thing. So I kind of gave him some slack for that. until he's sitting on the counter like he's a 9-year-old waiting for the police to get there. Like, I just love how he sits on the counter then hops off when they get there. But
I'm sorry, but police... I don't know. It's Big Me vibes. Like, oh, yeah. House is fucked up, wife's missing. Okay, I guess I'll just wait for the cops to get in.
Yeah. By the way, great house though. Like, I love that house.
It's nice. A nice house.
Oh, man, love that. Love it. It's so. Wow. I love the outside of it. I love how complex the inside is. Yet it still has a simple, like, palette out. Like, it's great. IKEA could never. All right, so let's talk about my favorite character, the detective. I know, shocking. I like the good guy, but like the detective. The reason she's my favorite character because she reminds me so much of Jodie Foster from Silence of the Lambs. Like that accent.
I see it.
Yeah. How y'all feel about the accent? Is it worse or better?
Better.
It's fine, yeah. I mean, yeah. She also plays in Fear the Walking Dead, and she plays someone who's more she has a southern accent in that, but it's more natural than like strong, like it's subtle or whatever.
Yeah.
But she played in that too, and she did very well in this. She's a similar character, except less serious in this, but she was very good.
Yeah, with this one, it's like she's not trying as hard. Fucking Jodie Foster just did way too much.
Yeah, that's true.
It was horrible.
Yeah, that accent was a very heavy topic of conversation throughout that podcast. So when got on here, I couldn't help but think about that. I'm like, she sounds kind of like her to me, but
something
better.
Something about that accent, dude. It's like, oh, mommy, tie me up. Yes.
No.
No. Wait, whose accent? Hold up.
Honestly.
Look, Walt's just coming around. You heard that?
Yeah, like both of them. I would take both, honestly. Like, you know.
Not that bad.
They're not. Well, yeah, me and Sheldon agreed Jodie Foster wasn't that bad.
What?
Oh, my
God. Yeah, but, baby, I'll be your cowboy. Let's go.
Yeah. Yeehaw. Oh,
yeehaw.
Call me Cornelius.
Please stop.
But, okay, yeah.
Okay.
I'm saying because she reminded me a lot of Jodie Foster because, not just because of the accent, but she seemed more competent and she was, like, immediately, like, looking for clues when she got in there. Like, I love how she's talking to him. And she just, you know, right when he just looking at him, it's a scene where she just looks at him. And then she immediately puts gloves on. It's like, all right, let's look around the house now. And I love her partner, too, how he was not an idiot. I love how he didn't like him from the beginning, which was funny. He was so weird.
I didn't like him.
He was really weird. He was just there to, like, be sus on Ben Affleck, honestly.
Yeah, well, he was there really for the detective to, like, she was there to help him work out everything, you know, so she's not talking to herself like Edward Norton does in Red Dragon. But, like, she's there to help, you know, provide the audience with, like, all right, so here are the clues, and this is what's happening here. How can we connect this to this? Like, you know, it helps to have both their characters around, and I just liked how they were presented and worked into the story. But speaking of clues, we got our first clue. Our first clue was basically the broken glass table in the living room, sign of struggle, maybe it was a kidnapping. But our second and third clue come upstairs and in the kitchen. Upstairs, the iron's on and there's a dress. And then the third clue is that there's a small speck of blood in the kitchen that she finds. And that leads us into our next flashback, which is Amazing Amy. I felt this part was weird. The fact that she was a child prodigy, or what's the word? She was a portrait for her parents' success.
Yeah. It was everything that her parents wanted her to be, but she flunked out at.
Which is a horrible thing, but at least they made money.
I mean, it's relatable.
Yeah.
It'd be like that.
And I love the little the joke she gives to her, or not really a joke, but like just the comment she gives to her mom. Her mom comes in and she's like, I thought you were gonna wear white with the wedding theme. She wore black.
She's like, I thought that'd be a little creepy.
Yeah. No, but oh man, I hate her parents. Honestly, I do hate them. Even when she goes missing, I'm like, her parents suck.
Yeah, they.
Really, oh yeah, they're pretty shit.
I love that. Like Nick and Amy, they seem so sweet together. Because even at this party where she's not having a good time, Nick decides that's the best time to propose to her, and she seems so happy. I love how when he goes and proposes to her as like a journalist, because they're both kind of like journalists or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they write articles.
It's from there we understand that everything's not okay. We get to one of my favorite scenes, and that is when they decide to take Nick in for questioning, and he knows nothing about his wife, which is absolutely hilarious. Like, Nick is dumb. Like, Nick is not the smartest man. Nick is absolutely stupid. And I find it hilarious how he goes through this entire movie. Like, half of my notes are just, Nick is so stupid. How do you die? Then again, it's like, Dick, do you know your wife's blood type? Does she have any friends? There's no kids in the picture? She didn't want to have kids. He knows absolutely nothing about her. And he hasn't even called the parents. That part was maybe.
That part was very suspicious on my end. Like, how'd you not call the parents yet?
She was like, get out of here. Go call the parents.
I mean, for real, though.
We do get this weird scene with apparently his dad is at the station, too, which coincidence. Yeah. But so it's kind of like, I guess that was there to give us like, okay, so maybe he is caring. And then they mentioned that they did move to Missouri because his mom was sick and then she died.
Well, he wasn't really caring because he's kind of a dick to his dad.
Yeah, he only visits him once a year.
And I think his dad has dementia. Right?
Yeah. He was. They found him wandering.
He has Alzheimer's.
Yeah, he has dementia.
Yeah. What? Okay. Well.
All right, so we get our next flashback in which Amy declares, marriage is hard. Also, sex in the library, which...
That part was wild. Galore. Like, god damn, dude. Wow.
I loved it. I'm like, I want to try that.
Honestly.
Like how he was telling her to shush, like, throughout the whole thing. Like, shh.
And then it, like, pans over to, like, a library, and that's, like, a shelf over.
Yeah.
We're just, like, looking for books, and then there's Amy.
Yeah. So, yeah, so at this point in the movie, the house is considered a crime scene, and Nick goes to stay with his sister. I love Margot in this movie.
She is pretty cool.
She kind of reminds me of Shelton.
Oh, really?
Like, if Shelton was a character in this movie, he'd be Margot.
Less emotional, but yeah, I see it. Because she kind of breaks down towards the end there.
Well, I mean...
That's pretty accurate.
It's... given this circumstance, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it's pretty accurate.
Oh. Yeah, because by the way, Margot and Nick are supposed to be twins, so I didn't get that till the very end. But
they're did they mention it before then? Yeah, they're paternal twins.
Yeah, like they really mention it when they get Margot in the media, as when the lady declares that they're too close.
Yeah, oh yeah, twins.
It's the whole
And I could only think about Riverdale, but
gross.
that's for another day.
Horrid show.
I like it.
You like trash fires.
Whatever. Whoever. I love the line that she, when they're talking, and she's like, you know, she's missing and everything, and she goes, "Well, whoever took her is bound to bring her back," which is like
false.
Yeah, probably. Because it's through Margot's perception that no one really likes Amy. They care for her, but they don't like being around her. She's standoffish. Yeah.
That's why she doesn't have friends.
Yeah, she was like, he was like, I just told him that she was difficult. She's like, everybody knows complicated. He's like, I told the cops that she was complicated. She's like, everybody knows that complicated is code for bitch.
Dude, I was in a Discord with some friends while I was watching the movie. And fucking, I was like, I paused it. I was like, hey, so if somebody says someone's complicated, is that just like code for saying they're a bitch? And everyone was like, yeah.
Pretty much.
So fucking funny.
Relatable. So we get a witness with Noelle. How we feel about the nosy neighbor Noelle?
Oh my god, go away.
She was so
nobody likes nosy so neighbors.
Annoying. No, I love how she was like, she came over with her kids talking about like, is AB there? Is she okay?
Oh my god.
But yeah, she provides more of a story being formed as she goes to the detective. And it's like, yeah, me and Amy were best friends. And gives her a bunch of pictures. Panty drawer. I think that's what it was. And that's her, like, another clue for them. But it turns out to just be the scavenger hunt that they go on for their anniversary. Okay, this whole scavenger hunt thing cute or is it just weird?
Ben Affleck's reaction to it is how I feel.
But yeah, so the police find a note in her...
Indifferent and a little annoyed.
I like the scavenger hunt. I think it's like, it was cute for them, and then it turned out to be like, this specific scavenger hunt was like... Oh,
you're going on death row scavenger?
Yeah, it was literally her telling him, which is very clever and petty, which is something I'd probably do, like pretty much telling you as you're going on the scavenger hunt that I know what you did, and I know it's your piece of shit, and guess what? Now you're about to go up a river.
Yeah, that was
enjoy. Like, I love that. I love it.
Yeah, I have to agree. That, okay, like, I thought the whole scavenger hunt thing was weird for a normal married couple, but as we find out, this is not a normal married couple. They are, I think that it's safe to say that they're both toxic, but
they're petty.
Amy has a point, so it kind of makes it even more entertaining, because Nick just kind of sucks. Like, Nick is so weird in this movie. Like, Ben Affleck is so weird in this movie for me, because I'm so used to him being the suave dude. But here, he's just an idiot. And I feel like it takes a good actor to play that big of an idiot.
Yeah, honestly.
Because he misses all of the signs. Like, he's smart enough to put together the scavenger hunt clues, but anything else is just beyond him.
Well, he kind of, by the time the scavenger hunt thing happened, he knew what was up.
No, it took him like a few clues after that. Like, it took him, it was like right after, it was even after the whole panty thing in his office that...
I mean, there's a reason he didn't care that she was gone. He knew she was crazy.
I don't know.
He didn't know exactly what she did, but he knew that, like, that shit was her.
I know, but, like, all signs are clearly pointing to him, and he didn't even realize that. Like, it had to be told to him much later.
He didn't realize how crazy she was.
He married her! How do you not know?
Yeah, but their marriage was very quick.
No, it's only been, like, a year. They've been married, over... They've been married for 5 years.
No,
five
I mean years. Like, they got married quickly. Like, they didn't know each other for super long.
I'm pretty sure they did. I don't know. I How lost track of it.
No, I don't think they did.
No, it was short.
Huh. I think they dated for like a few months or so.
Yeah.
And they got married. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I'm not gonna lie. I lost track. I tried to keep track of the whole like time things in the movie. They give you like little time stamps for where they're. Where we are in the story.
Yeah,
I lost track at some point.
Yeah.
I tried to write them down, but I lost track. But I do want to talk about the press conference scene, because this scene is absolutely amazing. I love this press conference scene. And the reason I say that is because it's so explanatory of the type of director that David Fincher is. And I want to know if you guys noticed it. So in this press conference scene, the parents are in town. They're holding a giant press conference to announce that, hey, Amy is missing. She's kind of sort of a celebrity, so that's why there's a lot of press there. Amazing Amy is missing. This is her husband, and we are her parents if you find her, blah, 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 blah. So in this scene, the entire scene and room and everyone dressed in the room, they're dressed in earth tones. The parents specifically are in yellow and they're in yellows. The press is in like orange and green. The detective is in black. And then you have Ben Affleck there in bright light blue. And it kind of just it's so genius and so clever, because it's like he's telling you, the director is there telling you that this guy stands out and everything, he's just not blending in. And that's kind of what Amy's point is throughout the story, is that Nick just didn't blend in with the type of world that he presented to her when they first got together.
He's a phone.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
So in there, you know, it kind of is in that one scene, he tells you the character, who the character is and where the character will go. And he also tells you, like, you know, his journey is that he just doesn't fit in this world. He stands out, and it makes him even more guilty because he's a big old blue spot in this sea of yellow, greens, and blacks. But I just love this scene. Yeah, I like the fact that Nick wears blue because it is considered a cold color, while everybody else is in a warm, like, tone and situation.
I never picked up on that.
It's so good. It's so good. But
neither did I.
It's topped off with Nick smiling next to the picture, though, which was a dumb move.
His smiles were always horribly timed.
He decided to smile next to the picture. And I love how later on when Amy is watching on TV, how she's like, she predicts it too. She's like, yeah, that classic Nick smile. And he does it. And it's like,
darling Nick smile.
She just knew.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Jonathan thinks Amy's the bad guy in this movie and he hates her, but I think it's the opposite way around. I don't like Nick.
What did she do to those past guys? The guy she got put in jail for sexual assault when it was just her fucking getting back ghosting her.
I'm not saying
she's a good person. That one was actually crazy. But the thing is, Desi.
He said how controlling she was. We have to assume that she was doing that same thing, because the reason that Nick had such an issue with being with her at that point and cheated on her and all that was because she was being so controlling over his life.
Only because he switched up her life.
He came into her life being the person that she likes, which he wasn't. He was being somebody who he wasn't to impress her.
So was she.
Ended up not being his, like, the type of person that he should be. And then that's
she
why
did the same exact thing to him, because she said he was the type of person. He was when she first met him, she said he was the type of person that liked cool girl. So that's what she gave him.
Yeah, and then he did the same thing to her and it didn't work.
No. She said she used him wanting a cool girl to try and mold him into the man she wanted, and she got him there for a little bit, but then he switched off. She was trying to change him into who she wanted him to be. And when he stopped being who she wanted him to be and cheated on him, she wanted to get rid of him like she did to the guy with the false sexual assault claim. That's what happened.
I'm going to intervene here, and I'm going to kind of come down the middle on this. I think that... What do I think?
I mean, she broke it down herself.
She's definitely, they're both really, really, like, bad. But it's not all Amy. Like, it's both of them.
It feels like
it's pitted against one person, and it's not. It's both of them.
Both of them are shitty people. She manipulated him into that position, and her trying to force him to be someone who he isn't. Of course, he's going to do some shitty shit. He's going to be a shitty person after that.
Well, I think it all goes down to the fact, we're skipping ahead here, but I think it goes down to what Amy says later on when she talks about marriage. If you want to test your marriage for weak spots, add one recession, subtract two jobs. And we see that play out with both of them. They had a life in New York. And then a recession happened. And on top of that, you know, Nick kind of just became a couch potato. He said he's never not had a job before, and he doesn't know how to go out and get one. While she is, in order to accommodate him, she's taking from her trust fund and paying things off while also doing stuff with her parents. And then everything gets uprooted for Amy, who's already kind of starting to be tested a bit. Everything is uprooted for Amy on her side of it when he makes them move to Missouri because his mother is dying. She says in the movie, she didn't mind moving. She just wished that he had asked first. So it's kind of this. I feel like this is a normal thing when it comes to relationships and marriage, where, you know, it kind of seems you start to assume your partner, when things happen and you get too comfortable, you start to assume what they might feel on something. And so you just automatically start doing things without their, not even the consent, but more of just like without their involvement. And it's that point where Amy starts to feel like, okay, I'm just along for the ride since he decides to just move my life from New York to Missouri. Now, again, I feel like Amy probably wouldn't have had a problem if Nick had went to her and asked and they had made a plan. But no, Nick's because of it, you know, it is not necessarily Nick's fault. It's his mom. She's dying. But like if they had just worked something out, maybe it would have smoothed over. But Nick, being the dumb and clueless person he is, he just decides to just go. And next thing they know, they stay there in Missouri for 2 years. And that's sucking the life out of Amy. And she decides to like spice things up. Like, it's obvious that Amy is bored. So if we're talking about which person is the villain or not, I don't think, I kind of lean more towards Savannah. I don't think that either one is the antagonist, while Amy does take that role from the moment we find out that she's alive, up until the end. But before that, Nick, it's pretty obvious that Nick is the suspicious one.
I mean, Nick's the driving force, I think. Your point is true, right? I agree with your point. It's just the when you equate both levels of bad things that each person has done, whether it's past before the relationship, the early stages, and all the way through, putting it all together, she's definitely worse. But well, I wouldn't say she's worse.
She's extreme. She took it to an extreme, but she
murdered a man.
He cheated. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. I don't know.
No, it's not. It's the same thing. No.
I mean, it's not.
It's clear she has some psychological issues that were definitely triggered, which caused her to do some unmentionable things. But given the circumstance, did she kill the wrong man? Yes.
Yes.
Actually, I think he deserves to die, but we'll get to that.
Oh my god. I mean, he was kind of creepy.
Desi was creepy, but then again, would I like to have a man shower me with a bunch of riches and come pick me up from a casino with me looking like that?
No.
Would you love to be on camera everywhere you are in the house, just about?
Desi was talking about the kids and the money, and he was not letting her leave.
He was pretty controlling to... He's pretty controlling.
Amy. Yeah.
He's bad. He's creepy, and he's, you know, maybe not the best person. He didn't deserve to die. I think he deserved to die.
That guy had. He was
pretty sweet.
I think I put in my notes. He's what Christian Grey would be in real life, which is a creepy, narcissistic, controlling person. Like he would keep Amy in that house or that lake house or whatever. Like he deserved to die. Like
Walter, Neil Patrick I feel Harris. Like if you had money, you'd be like that.
I would like, not
if you were
keep
rich,
a girl.
Rich, I feel like you'd be like that.
I would not keep a woman in the house and force her to stay there. And while I, like, you know, put this on, like, I wouldn't dress her as a doll. That was basically what I got Desi.
Yeah,
he was
I think he accommodated for her because that's what she is like. Because he knew her. He knows her taste and knows she's expensive and likes expensive things. And, you know, she's uppity. And then he got that for her, which... I mean, I wouldn't mind.
Savannah has a history.
Too heavy-handed, though.
If you know my style.
I mean, we're told at the beginning, before we even see him, we're told that he is a stalker and he's been stalking Amy since they've dated.
We also know that Amy is very, like, she likes to be in control.
Yeah.
So, he was way too controlling.
I mean, shit, she manipulated the whole fucking country, basically. Damn.
She really did. Yeah. Like, but I feel like both of you guys are valid in a way. From the way I saw it, for me, I feel like they're both, I feel like we're in a situation similar to what I described when we did Silence of the Lambs and how Hannibal, and this is more or less Hannibal and Will Graham, but it kind of sort of goes into Hannibal and Clarice. But basically, you have two people, two personalities who are on two different ends of a spectrum, but yet they're on that spectrum because they meet at the same level. I feel like Nick is just as, while he may not be as attentive, detailed, and conniving as Amy is, he is just as destructive. He is just as, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
He knows how to attack Amy emotionally, which is what gets her back at the end. He knew looking into that camera that she was out there somewhere, and that if he just uttered these words, she would come back in some form or whatever. So I feel like that's Nick's character, while Amy retaliated in a much more extreme way. Nick knew just what to do because he knows Amy, and that's what she comes back. And you know, she does end up, I feel like Amy does win at the end of this, because she finds a way to trap him in that marriage. And mm-hmm. you know, we find out at the beginning is that the reason she decided to go, like, just go running off is because he wanted a divorce. And she said, no, you're not getting out of this that easy.
You don't get to win. I think
that was her plan the entire time. Like, I think at the end of the day, she's planning it for a win-win. Rather, he goes to jail or on death row or whatever. And then she gets to start a new life and do what she wants.
Well, I think Amy changes her mind. I don't think she had a plan. I think she changes her mind.
I think her plan was set like that because she was watching the TV every single time. She wanted to know what he would say, if she had her mind fully made up with the type of person she is, she wouldn't have left the back door.
No. I feel like Nick did get to her and she changed her mind. And again, she also had help from being robbed by two.
Why wouldn't she just get him arrested anyway when she found out he wanted to divorce her? Or why wouldn't she have just gotten pregnant in the first place?
It was like Savannah saying she wanted to kill herself. That was the original plan, that she was going to turn up in the river and that he would go down the river.
That's true.
But as she watched the case, you know, grow, you know, she realized that, okay, maybe I need to switch things up here.
Well, because she started realizing that she was winning, because their media was tearing him apart, and she was like, all right, well,
killing herself and putting her in the river was more of like a you go and get locked up when they find me type shit.
Yeah, but she's saying like, okay, well, it clearly it's not going very well for him, and the entire world hates him. You know what? Maybe I won't kill myself. Because when she was watching the TV, I can't remember what specific part they were like ripping out. I think it was when we smiled. It was one specific part. She got up and went outside, and then she did like a little Irish, like she jumped up and like clicked her heels, like she was happy. And then she went to her place, and then she took off the day that she was going to kill herself. Because she's seen that they were like destroying him on TV, and she was like, you know what? I'm good. I don't think I'm gonna kill myself now because I win. Like, that's pretty much her. Yeah,
she realized.
Just wanted to win.
Yeah, she just wanted to win.
Yeah, and I feel like that's such a fascinating thing for me. It's, like,
she's so.
Like, I would
psycho.
Love.
I love it.
I kind of love it too. It's so hot.
It's like, yeah.
It's like, if you could get the whole entire country to turn on me, you have my heart. Like, you got me. Like, I'm not going anywhere, baby. Like, you got me. I will stay with you to the end of time. Like, I know, like, you know, it's 2020. We're trying to avoid toxic things now, but like, every now and then,
why
I
feel
is like,
toxic gotta be so sexy?
Yes.
At this point, it's our life now. After this year,
yes.
2020 has been too wild. We can't go back.
This is our lifestyle now.
Yes, man, she can buy me anything she wants after that. Like, you know, take my Fenty draws, just, you know, just hold me. You killed someone for me? Dang.
Who you want me to kill?
Let me stop, like, revealing my kinks to everybody.
Oh my god.
I want to do a scavenger hunt, honestly, but that's But yeah, I mean, I love the conversation we're going here. For people who wants to like follow the movie here, I'm gonna just kind of spitfire. I mean, we'll reveal if we recommend the movie or not, because this is more of a movie that you have to kind of watch rather than just listen to us talk about. But we can talk about the conversation, because things just keep happening. And I love that it's halfway through the movie that we find out that Amy is just driving along the highway.
I thought that was going to be the end. Like, I looked at the timestamp. I was like, wait a second. We're getting all this revealed halfway through. What the hell?
Yes. I remember watching this and it blew me and my mom positively looked at each other like, no, no. And we just kept watching. Like, it blew our minds when we saw her riding along that highway and she's just describing all the women she's looking at passing by who has submitted to their men. And I was like, this is amazing. This is amazing.
That whole monologue was crazy. Like the whole, when she was like, you know, you just find a guy and if you like him, you figure out what he might like, then you mold yourself to that. And then after you've molded yourself to that, you can use that to turn him into the person you want him to be. And I was like, holy shit, that's fucking so psychotic.
But true. I feel like a lot of people in relationships go through that.
Which is why Levi's relationship is just toxic.
It sounds so fun, though.
I don't know.
I like the mystery. I like the mystery of it.
Yeah, like, things just, I think a big part of this movie is just the subtle escalation. I love the fact that she just completely changes her appearance in a bathroom and then cleans it up afterwards, though. But like,
you know how hard it is to dye your hair?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, she did it in a sink in a gas station? I couldn't.
And that's exactly why she got mugged at that motel, too.
Yeah, she's a dumb bitch, honestly.
That was a great scene. I love that, scene.
That... I look how she was so paranoid the entire time, and then like the one moment she decided to let her guard down, they're there at the door. I'm like, well, you deserve that one. But
one thing that got me too about that motel scene is, right, she, you know, the man and the woman are both gonna mug her, but the guy's doing all the heavy lifting. He turns to her and tries to kind of appeal to her on like a, hey, we're both women, why are you agreeing to do this? And she's like, it was my idea. I was like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, like, that was pretty brutal.
That was brutal.
But... love that she's spitting her drink.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
When she insults her, like, Loki, she's like, uh-huh, yeah. The fact that it was a mountain, what was it, a Mountain Dew?
It was a Mountain Dew, and she was eating Fritos, and she was like, she seems like a snobby bitch to me. She probably deserved it. She got up, walked in the back, and she said, and mixed her drink, and she came back and drank it, and she took a big old sip, and she said,
I mean, she was right, though.
Man.
She could have just divorced him. She had a prenup signed.
Okay, let's get to this prenup thing. I don't really know what... I mean, I get what the concept of a prenup, but basically, so she signed it, or did Nick sign it?
They both had to.
They both had to sign
it. Rather that, or she brought it to him, because she was the one with all the finances.
Yeah, so Nick has it in a box later. So I thought that she had him sign a prenup.
Lawyers always do multiple copies. So it doesn't matter.
Basically the prenup was just a way to explain the whole trust fund thing, though. Like, for them to keep whatever's left or whatever spend or whatever.
No. It was to explain, like, she felt like he was just towing her along for the money and sex whenever he wanted it. And he wouldn't he didn't want to divorce her because of the prenup, because then he'd lose all the money and he didn't have a job anymore, and then everything was in her name. But I feel like a lot of the journal was like, part of it was what she really thought, and part of it was just to incriminate him. I felt like,
I feel like there's certain, I feel like the stuff that we see is definitely how she felt. But then when the police get a hold of it and they start reading things of what else she put in there, we understand that, okay, some of it is fabricated. But like, I feel like, you know, the whole pushing scene, let's talk about that. Like, that was a heated conversation about
on kids. The stairs.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was insane.
It's just I think that's when I started like hating Nick. I'm like, okay, I really don't fucking like this guy. It's like when that scene happened after he, like, she felt that he was only using her for sex, and then I was like,
I didn't like my heart.
And then she kind of does what I do, which is why I sympathize for her.
Mm-hmm.
She does that whole, like, I'm trying to make you happy, so I, like, act that, I, like...
You submit.
Yeah, I try to do something that I feel like it's going to help us. I say something that I feel like is going to uplift us. And then she gets shot down, which is, I felt that, and I was like, oh, fuck, like, I, like, been there, done that, bitch.
Yeah.
And then it just doesn't work out, and then she's trying to, like, help the relationship, like, she's putting in the effort, and then he shoots her down, and then that's when, like, I'm like, okay, like, I really don't like this guy, he's an asshole, he's a dick, and all yeah. she's wanting to do is just try to be happy with him, and then he's like, why would I want to have a kid with you? This is a horrible time. Da, da, da. And then I'm just like, oh, she just yeah, like, she's trying to be happy. Like, she's trying to help.
It's like, I feel so bad for her, but it's like putting everything into retrospect. It's like, we really don't get enough about their dynamic as a relationship. Mm-hmm. Really the toxic bits to know, like, who pushes who to where, you know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, let's revert back to Nick's side of it, because what does he have? I mean, like, as of his point of view on Amy, what does Nick think? Because I thought that everything that Nick expressed about his feelings of Amy were also valid. She's standoffish. She's controlling. He doesn't like the fact that, you know, she says earlier, I don't want to become the nagging wife. But it's kind of a twist on things, because Nick is always the one nagging about what she's doing and what she's not yeah. doing. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a weird situation. It's so weird for me in this movie, because we audibly and visually understand how Amy feels, but mm-hmm. we only visually get what Nick really feels and what he sees. He is sympathetic. Like, he is, you know, his whole thing is that he cheated. And that's what kind yeah. of set off everything in motion. He's dating this one of his students, which is a college girl.
Oh, God.
He teaches writing, and I love how his sister calls her super skank or
super twat.
Super twat, yeah, super twat.
Super twat. She's like, yeah. Oh, so we're dealing with a 20-year-old that doesn't know where she leaves her panties, and I was like, oh, I was God. Thinking the same thing when he asked her that. He's like, divorce. She was like, I don't know, maybe they better be. And I'm like, bitch, come on.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Are yeah. you that much of a fucking idiot? Like, oh, I hated that bitch.
And then he hooks up with her at his sister's house.
That was so bad.
Yeah. I was like, this is what I really wrote down. I was like, Nick is dumb. Nick is so yeah. stupid.
He's not,
like,
smart.
As there's, like, police and paparazzi literally right outside the door.
The thing everywhere. Is, though, because of how dumb he is, you really feel like, you know that all of his reactions and all of his thought process that you see is genuine.
Yeah, that's what I was
trying
to say
earlier. That's the thing that gets me with her, is that you don't know what part of what she is telling us through narration is her bullshitting or her lying in their notebook to the cops. Because we know that all of her memories that she's going through is in the notebook. Like, all yeah. the monologue from her is from the notebook. So how much of it is bullshit to get him incriminated, and how much of it is genuine, genuinely how she feels? Like, or is the whole notebook just a whole, like, petty scheme for her to get her way? Like, you don't know.
I think you do know.
I feel like it was real.
Yeah, I feel like everything that we see, and this is mainly in the first act of the movie, the first hour, but, like,
yeah.
everything we see in which Amy is narrating, and I think that ends after the push, like, that's the last scene we get of her narrating. No, she does it later with when she finds the, him and the girl outside the bar.
Yeah.
But other than that, everything we see of her narrating, I think, is what happened, is what's real. But Amy kind of undercuts it by giving us her emotional view on it, and how, you know, after she gets pushed, she's like, I'm scared this man will kill me. Like, that's yeah, how
that's
she
the
feels.
Thing. I feel like her emotional feelings about the situations are right, but some of them are twisted. Like, the actual situations are somewhat twisted in certain areas. That's what I feel like. Like, how she felt is genuine, but she twists it.
Yeah, but, like, we find out later on that the whole gun thing was a lie. Like, she...
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
She set that up.
Which
and everything
she didn't
after
fear
that,
for her life like that.
Yeah, she was just... She knew at that point she was going to set him up, like, on Valentine's Day. But I right. feel like anything before that is what happened, because we get both of their sides. But, again, I feel like... You're kind of confused, because you do get Amy explaining it rather than Nick explaining it also.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just the fact that, like, she's trying to set up, and it's like the whole first half of her dialogue in it is very like, I'm going through this shit. This stuff is really bad for me. And of course, it puts you on her side, like, damn, she's going through all this. No wonder why she ran away or is missing for whatever reason. But I feel like once you get to that other half where she starts explaining her whole plan, mm-hmm. and then you see her driving the car, once you get to that half, I feel like that's when the mask slips. And you get to see mm-hmm. really what the intentions of her narrations are portraying.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's just how she is in the whole thing. It's like, I don't believe that she allowed herself to be this poor little victim, because that's just not the type of person she was. And she was way too controlling to allow herself to be that kind of person.
Yeah, I mean, I get that, but I'm saying,
unless it was manipulation.
I feel like it's what it was. I feel like, I don't know. It's so much harder to kind of think. I feel like because
it's so complex. It's why I'm very. Like,
this movie is so out there.
I don't trust her. But then,
she's very hard to read and understand.
Yeah.
He when he said she was complicated, like he was real shit.
He was right. Yeah.
He's right.
Yeah.
But I mean, he cheated on her. That's like the only thing that really gets me is that, okay, you caught him cheating. Understandable. You're gonna punish him. That is movie logic, and you know, in some cases, real life logic. You cheated. Woman you logic, lied. Yeah. I'm gonna start using your credit card to secretly buy things and hide them in your sister's
thing.
You know, I'm gonna I'm gonna pretend that I'm pregnant, which was insane for me. Dude, I was like, whoa.
Hold on. Can we get into her shoving a whole ass wine bottle up her coochie?
Yes.
Like
she's.
It's, why did they do that again?
To show that it was a rape.
That was a little later on.
Yeah.
She dips it in the drink too, the dress too. Yeah. Look, mm-hmm. I'm gonna say this right now. Amy, when she reveals step by step how she got it, like how she did everything, I was like, you know what? I'm impressed. Like Annalise Keating would be impressed. Like this woman should be a lawyer.
Low key fell in love.
Dude, I'm telling y'all, she's fucking nuts, but I love her. Like I inspired to be like her.
We need to do a mini episode on like the psychology behind being attracted to crazy.
Honestly, because I was all here for it. Like I was very impressed. I'm just like, I wish I had a brain like this woman.
That was me. I was like, I need to get as crafty as her, because holy shit. Like, just fucking fake my
I could
and
get
dip
whatever
out.
I want if I did.
Like
this.
The fact that she bled herself and then planted her own blood in the kitchen and then cleaned it up to make
messy,
it seem
like
he did.
How he would do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hit herself in the face with a hammer.
That part.
She's nuts.
That part was awesome, honestly.
Like, my
God. I don't
know
why she did that either. I don't get that part.
She wanted to make her face look as unrecognizable as possible for a minute.
Yeah, usually bruises can help, cover up.
She hits herself hard enough, she's going to look a little different permanently, because
a
hammer to, like, that cheekbone, oof.
I was wondering, I was like, why'd she just hit herself in the face? She's on the run, and she's literally not around anybody that would recognize her.
Yeah.
Like,
so...
Yeah, well, she is all over the news.
She is. At this point, she's all over the news.
Talk shows, everything.
People are really quickly turning on Nick. He does this whole vigil thing where he starts off good and then nosy neighbor comes in. Nah, I love this part. Nick, did you tell her that your wife was pregnant? And I was like,
6 weeks pregnant. Oh my God.
That was a twist, because he didn't even know. Like his reaction was like, what? I need to finish this sentence and then get out of here.
It was funny. As soon as she was like, did you know how your wife was 6 weeks pregnant? And then he finished the sentence. He stepped back. I don't know if y'all caught this. He stepped back from the mic, looked at her, Amy's parents, and was like, if y'all want to ask something, y'all can go ahead.
Yeah.
Oh. Oh my God. I never caught that until I rewatched it last night, and I just started dying.
Watching movies and then somebody reacts very badly, so I'm like, I would have did that.
Yeah.
man, that...
Say, if y'all want to ask something, y'all can.
and then he quickly got off the stage.
Yeah.
Oh, that part was hilarious. But another point I wanted to bring up is that, this movie, like I said, it really does a good job of escalating, but it does it in a more dramatic way. So we really, like, we understand that there are stakes for Nick throughout the movie, but it's not until they bring up the death penalty where it's like, oh no, one of the characters, Margo. Yeah, they're talking and she's like, does Missouri have the death penalty? And then everything just kind of clicks into place for everybody in the room. And it's like, but she's trying to murder this man.
But it's not confirmed until like two or three scenes later when it's like on the talk show, we could get him the death penalty. It's like, oh, fuck.
Mark, yeah.
You called it.
Yeah, man. It's like she set it up so perfectly. Like, it's her plan was just absolutely amazing. For it to like go this way, for him to just be this completely like trapped, that part was just awesome. Let's talk about Tyler Perry, his lawyer.
He was way too good in this movie.
So anybody listening, I don't know. I've seen a lot of Tyler Perry movies. I understand. I think he's a great businessman, but his. His writing irritates me to my core. But whenever he shows up in something like this, I'm like, you know what? He is talented. I understand where he's coming. He's way too good for this movie. He's way too good in this movie to like later on go put back on a dress. Like this man should have been. Why?
Honestly. Kind of wastes his talent with the whole Madea shit. Like give it up and do some real shit, bro. Because you are clearly a very talented man.
Yes, right.
He needs to put so much more effort into like other things other than fucking Madea.
Yes, and like even though Madea's like ended at this point, he could be doing so much more. And he's so good in this movie. Like the moment he steps in when Nick visits him in New York, he just adds energy. I'm like, what is this feeling I'm getting from Tyler Perry? Like, he's funny, but he's also serious. He's coming with the witty dialogue. He has the plan, and even when the plan doesn't work out later on with a talk show lady, he quickly like thinks. It's like he can play such a convincing lawyer that I feel so cheated every time I see him in anything else. I'm like, this man, he's so good at this movie.
Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, I hate that his name is Tanner though. Like, when have you ever met a black person named Tanner?
Well, we heard it today.
Great. Yeah. So let's get back to Desi, and then we're going to kind of just, this movie is all over the place. Like I said, like, we could talk about it, but it's really going to, everything we talk about is going to turn into a big old, like, conversation because it's just that in depth.
Yeah.
But I do think Desi deserves to die because I thought he was just way too creepy. He's the worst of the simps that I've ever seen.
I mean, you're not wrong there, to be real.
Yeah, but I love how she sets him up too.
She's maximum simp.
He tells her that there's cameras around the house, so she immediately fakes like he kidnapped and raped her, which is hilarious to me.
I thought she was trying to make it look like she had a miscarriage. That's what I thought
it looked like he was trying
like,
to, like,
the, you know, her. The wine around her vagina area, blood, you know, she's pregnant. I did not
Later on at the hospital, she says, like, he raped B.
Yeah, you know, I know that. I'm just saying, like, I didn't expect it. Whenever it all unraveled, I was like, oh, this bitch crazy.
Well, what moment was that for you when you realized, like, oh.
When she slit his throat with the box cutter.
Yeah, which is the best death in a movie I've ever seen in a long time, honestly.
Man, as he finished, what a climax.
That's what I put in my notes. I'm like, the climax of the movie is someone climaxing and dying.
Neil,
like,
that's Patrick Harris jizzing.
which is
what
hilarious.
A climax.
Yeah.
Literally.
Yes. I do. So also the mistress, the Andy, the mistress, she decides to come out as well, which kind of throws their plans out into the water, which is another funny moment. But Nick ends up killing the interview. But I couldn't help but think about R. Kelly when he's doing the interview and he's like, look at the camera and tell Amy what you want her to hear. She was here. I'm like, why is this the same camera angle as R. Kelly asking to forgive him?
Oh, my God.
Like, it kind of ruined that moment for me. He looks like R. Kelly in that scene. This movie is wild. It's absolutely wild. I love the moment where she returns, though, where she crashes the car to the yard and Nick comes out still looking confused like he's been looking all throughout the movie and everybody's outside. And he goes, and she just walks up to him and then falls to his arm. And he just goes,
faint.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You fucking bitch. Yeah. I was like, yes.
I felt that on a spiritual level.
He was so heated when you see that scene. He's like, you did not do this. Oh, man. Okay, so here's my one criticism of the movie, though. I think the ending is way too dragged out. I feel like they just added too much at the end with the whole, like, I like the conversation they have in the hallway about, you know, staying together and how he wants to leave, but she's like, no, you bought into this. You know, I explained it earlier. She needs him there and he needs her. It's kind of that toxic co-inhabitants kind of relationship that you get through the Hannibal movies. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I love it. But I just think that, you know, once we get to week 5, week 7 after being home and she's like, we're pregnant on TV and she's really trying to control him. Like, I get it. You could have ended it at the 5 week mark, honestly, or just like ended it at the interview. I don't know. I feel like you cut something to cut this down.
I really liked it because I feel like it's the only part of the movie where we get a really in-depth look at them as a couple without it being sugar-coated by narration.
Yeah, or a memory.
Yeah, because like memories can be twisted into being more romanticized or more toxic and vile. But I feel like we got that for what it was. And we can really see, like, okay, so this is what drove him to cheat. This is that. Because that feels like genuinely how she was. Because there was a reason in the first place why he stopped wanting to mess with her. It wasn't just a click, oh, I don't care about you anymore. Because he didn't seem like that kind of person. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but like...
Because he was way too into her. He proposed pretty quick, so he was digging the hell out of her.
Yeah.
So it had to have been something... to push him away. I don't trust her. Because I mean, it had to be something. He's too dumb to, like, just drop the love of his life for no good reason.
Yeah, like, they're clearly meant for each other in some capacity. He's emotionally damaging. She's a lot
fucking
of...
fucking crazy.
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. I feel like you cut something out. Like, maybe you cut the interview. I don't know. I feel like the conversation in the hallway before they do the interview was enough for me to be like, all right, cool. But then again, it's like, I would have cut something before that out or cut something after that out. I do like the shower scene between them, though, when she first comes home.
That
the washing
scene was
the blood
amazing.
Off.
And that then her bothered just me talk. Because she wasn't even cleaning her fucking self correctly. I was like, bitch, you have blood going around. Clean yourself.
I love how she's like, take off your clothes. I need to know if you're not wearing a wire. Like, that part was fun.
She was fucking badass in that part.
Rosamund Pike is so amazing in this movie. I feel like everyone in this movie does a good job, but it's really Rosamund Pike and Ben Affleck. Again, Ben Affleck, you have to be a good actor to play that oblivious. Like, he had no clue until the last 30 minutes of this movie where he's talking to himself in the mirror. Like, that was amazing. Especially for a guy that played Daredevil. But, I feel like it was... I feel like I got it, but I didn't need all of these like epilogues at the end. I feel like you save one of them and make that the ending. Instead, we have like the before and then the after, then the after. And it took a while for it to wrap up. You cut something out. But I do like that we end the movie with the shot that we began with, which is just poetic.
I enjoyed it. I felt like it fit.
Yeah.
Because if it would have ended any sooner without all of that, then you really don't get a full.
I would have been questioning. I would have been like, all right. Yeah, I would have been like, so what happened when after she came home? Like, what they doing now?
Yeah.
How are they living together?
I guess.
And again,
I feel like
you never get a reason. Like, everybody cheats, wants to divorce this or that for a reason. So what is his reason? Because we never got that until, like, you get it subtly throughout whenever he talks about, like, the other people. But, like, I don't know. I just feel like you don't really get it full in your face, and the way they portray it subtly isn't enough or direct enough for you to be like, okay, well, she did this to him. You know what I mean?
I guess.
Because he may have chosen to, like, hey, we're going to Missouri because my mom's dying, but we don't know what she chose for him.
Okay, yeah, I do understand that part.
That's what I mean. And, like, okay. She chose the kid for him, so...
She murdered a man for him.
And the thing is, the sperm sample was supposed to be destroyed long ago.
Oh, yeah, so I caught on to that.
She was ready. She was controlling him, period.
Guns ablaze.
About the baby, at least. I just want to know, like, who do we think, like, out of both of them, who do we think is more in the wrong, or do we think it's pretty equal on wrongdoing between the two?
I feel like it's too complicated to call, but
yeah,
it is really close.
Because Amy is so extreme, but she's only retaliating out of the mental and emotional draining that he had on her for so many years. Yeah. So it kind of, but neither one of them are justified.
Yeah.
Which is what we're stuck, which is why they kind of get back together at the end.
True.
So it's so hard to pick who's in the wrong here. I mean, the movie is called Gone Girl. So, I mean, I reference the fact that it's a missing person's case, but usually the title kind of gives you a link into how things will be or what the story is going to be about usually. So with that being said, I'm going to continue to say that I think Amy wins because I feel like both of them are more aware of each other and what each other. I feel like we get at the end in the interview, they wrap up what they both are going to be doing for the rest of their lives or how they are going to revamp their relationship. They both have a new understanding of each other. They both are going to be much more honest with each other, and they both have a responsibility in, you know, being in the form of a kid, but metaphorically that they both are back on the same mental level as each other, romantically and psychologically.
Is she really pregnant at the end?
Yes.
Yeah, she's really pregnant. Yeah, they reveal it.
Because she kept his DNA
sperm frozen. Yeah.
Yep.
God, I love her.
Fucking she's insane.
She's a queen. She's awesome.
Yeah, she is up there with one of the few women I admire.
I don't know. I draw a line at the baby. Like, okay, murder, fine. Blackmail, try to get me. Okay, fine. But
take it a life.
At least let me fuck you, dude. Don't use my sperm from a fridge. That's fucked.
I'm not sure after that anyway, so it doesn't matter. He hated her so much. He's not attracted to her.
No, I don't think they had sex since she came back. So
no.
He was in the same bedroom for a minute. Yeah,
exactly.
Because she had like that pregnancy test. He was like, "This is bullshit." He threw it out. He's like, "I haven't touched you. I'm getting a fraternity test."
Yeah. Man, just imagine that Maury episode.
Oh my god.
You did what for him? I'm mad at him, Maury.
Neil Patrick Harris.
I mean, no, I thought Neil Patrick Harris was gay.
Not gonna lie, when she grabbed his butt during the sex scene, I was like, oh, I like looked away and I looked back. And I was like, wait a second, did she pop a finger in there? What is going on? Whoa.
Surprise finger in the butt. All right, guys, let's wrap it up here. Gone Girl, recommend or not recommend? Savannah, you go first.
Recommend. I fucking love this movie.
I definitely recommend it. It's an amazing mystery. Mm-hmm. I was expecting some like romance drama, like, oh, my girlfriend left and now I want to find her, but she leaves these clues and I just can't find her. But no, it was very grittier and a lot more dark, and I really enjoyed that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like you just described the entirety of Paper Towns, and I don't ever want to speak of that movie ever again.
That's what I thought this was.
You stupid.
I thought this movie was Paper Towns, but I never watched either. So.
Yeah, no. Rewatch Gone Girl. Never watch Paper Towns. I like Nat Wolf, but never watch Paper Towns. I could stand that movie.
What I was expecting with this, so I was dreading it.
Yeah. Besides, for me, I totally recommend it. It's one of my favorite movies. For me, the only complaint I have is that the ending is dragged out a little bit. But I love watching this movie. I get a certain energy from watching this movie. It's such a refreshing feeling going along this journey and solving this mystery. I feel like it's not as layered visually as most of David Fincher's movies. Like you go back to Zodiac, a movie I didn't really like, but like you can go through that movie, you can just pick out certain things that he does with the camera and the sets. Here it's mainly just color and character and camera movement and music. But with that being said, is this my favorite of David Fincher's movies? After I've watched Seven, which I really did like after watching it for the first time, I think Gone Girl's still up there for me. I just love the feeling this movie gives me. And you know, the only other movie of David Fincher's that I think rival it is Seven and The Social Network. I think The Social Network is probably the closest to this movie. And I would call that one probably one of his best movies as well. Probably is his best movies. The only thing that this movie doesn't really have is just that rush that Fight Club has. But yeah, it's a different kind of rush that this movie does. It's more escalation rather than shock. But other than that, I totally recommend it. Definitely check it out. We, you know, come back and re-listen to this. It's awesome. I did want to do a little thing at the end here, because after I watched this movie, I was reminded of another movie. I was reminded of another film called Cruel Intentions. I don't know if you guys ever heard of it or seen it. No. It's with Sarah Michelle Gellar, Ryan Phillippe, Reese Witherspoon, and Selma Blair, and Joshua Jackson. I absolutely love that movie. I definitely want to do it on the podcast someday. It's another great thriller. It centers around prep school teens, but it's still a great thriller with an emotional romantic kick to it. But because I feel like the plot and narrative aren't very similar to each other, but they both share the same deeper look at the theme going on, which is understanding the difference between what you want and what you like, understanding the difference between what your lust is and your desires are, as well as acknowledging someone else's. And I feel like both films evaluate the pros and cons of commitment and what comes with that and what that means for both parties involved. You know, at the end of the day, both movies kind of say the same thing. If you treat your relationship or love like a game that you can win at, eventually you're going to lose in one shape or another. So that's just what I got from this. But yeah, I totally recommend Gone Girl. We all recommended it. This is actually the last episode for our mystery series of November. So, did you guys like this little mystery series that we did here?
It was all right.
Yeah, I liked it.
It was good.
Yay.
I mean, I was only in two of them, but.
But Scooby-Doo.
Oh, I like Scooby-Doo. Raw. But, yeah. Yeah, I definitely want to do some more mystery movies in the future. We will, most likely. I mean, it's called The Murder Board. You need a detective. But, by the time this podcast will be out, it'll be after Thanksgiving. It'll be that Sunday. And then we're probably going to take a little break the first week. You probably won't hear from us in that first week of December, but we will be back for our December series. It's only three episodes, but I'm calling it December Nightmares because I couldn't think of anything else. But we're doing three movies there. We're starting with a Thanksgiving movie, though, called Blood Rage. I can't wait for you guys to watch that movie. After that is another Christmas horror movie called Silent Night, Deadly Night. And then after that, we'll do The Nightmare Before Christmas. It'll be my first time watching that movie entirely.
Yeah. Oh my God.
I'm excited.
The last for me.
And then we'll head into the New Year's with a new series. But other than that, that's all we got coming up right now. So thank you for listening to the podcast. If you want more from the Murder Board podcast, you can find it on Instagram at murderboard_pod and on Twitter at murderboardthe. Please don't forget to share the podcast with family and friends. You can hear from us on multiple podcast networks such as Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and right here on Anchor. Also consider supporting the podcast and sustaining future episodes such as this by hitting the support/link button down below in the show notes. Look for new episodes on Fridays and Sundays, and we will catch you again on the Murder Board.
Alrighty.
I wish you think they're gonna make a second one? They need to make a second one.
A second Gone Girl?
Yes.
They won't.
I don't know. I don't think so.
That disappoints me.
I just don't know where they would go with it.
Just check out the other ones. Just check out Sharp Objects and Dark Places.
Huh.
Is that like a sequel?
I would feel like they're in the same world because it's the same writer.
Is there a book?
Yeah, The Gone Girl is based on a book. But I said at the beginning.
Yeah.
I mean, like, is there like a sequel like book? Like, I know
Gone Girl. Oh,
like,
no.
That's what I meant. Oh man, what the fuck?
Bye, guys.
All right, bye.
But all right, so let's get back into it. Let's get into it.
Get into it. Yeah.
That's going at the end. All right.